The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Kevin Stanfield and Claude Jennings, who are entirely responsible for its content. Sorry, guys, you are on your own.
This is the Federal Football Report, a weekly wrap-up of all things burgundy and gold. The Federal Football Report on Federal News Radio. Here are your hosts, Kevin Stanfield and Claude Jennings.
Welcome back to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Network, 1500 AM. The website is federalnewsnetwork.com. I'm Claude Jennings. He's Kevin Stanfield. Man, this is not a Thanksgiving edition of the show.
Yeah.
Almost like a post. You know what? Here's the, it feels like, or folks would want us to at least buy into this is some kind of post-mortem on the season, as if the season is over because of the 31-23 loss in Dallas to the Dallas Cowboys on Thanksgiving Day. But, Kevin, I don't feel like this is the end of the season. And I know this is not fake news or not segment, so we'll get into what this whole thing means and whether what we're hearing is fake news or not. But why is everything so doom and gloom and everyone so down on the team right now? Like, I get it. Up two games in the division. Two games over Dallas, two games over Philadelphia, lose a couple games straight. Now, you know, the Cowboys have the tiebreaker, but you're still 6-5. Dallas still has the Saints coming up on Thursday Night Football. The Redskins play Philadelphia and still have winnable games, the easiest schedule out of the three teams and the three top teams in the NFC East. Why is everyone so down? Am I living in the Twilight Zone?
Well, let me tell you this. When I walked into the studio this afternoon, you know, our good friends, Jimmy Argros and Brian Albin were in there, and
Falcons fan, as far as Jimmy's concerned, Brian Albin, Giants fan.
Right,
so
right.
So he's not paying attention to football.
Right, right. So Jimmy said, "Hey, Kevin, you in here to do the Federal Football Report?" And I said, and I used these exact words, "More of a postmortem."
You did? Did you use those exact words?
I used those exact words, man, because.
Wow.
And I don't want to be defeatist because we're in first place. You know, that's a fact, you know. Mm-hmm. But I don't see anything changing, man. When I was a kid, one of my favorite shows, and this is before your time, right? There was a show on ABC on Friday nights called The Time Tunnel.
Oh, I'll have to look that up on YouTube.
Yeah, and basically it was they were working on this time machine, and it was this long tunnel you walk in, and you set it, and they would go back in time. But there was an accident. And one of the guys was mysteriously thrown into the tunnel, and then another guy went in to save him, and they couldn't control it, so they just were like tossed from time to time to time to time. So, if you take that movie and then
randomly, at random moments, they were just sent to random parts of history.
So they might be like they were chilling with Genghis Khan one minute, and the next thing you know, they're tumbling through time end up with a caveman or something, right? You know, it was like that. It was one of my favorite shows. The time, I'm sure.
Sounds like something I would like if I were.
Go on YouTube. I'm sure you can find some. But you take that show, marry it to Groundhog Day, where you keep ending up at the same spot over and over and over again, and that's what you got with this team.
So in theory, what this Redskins show or sitcom would be is you're traveling back in time, and no matter what time period you're in, the same thing would keep happening to you no matter where you are.
That's exactly right. That is it in a nutshell. It's called the Groundhog Tunnel.
I love it. The Groundhog Time Tunnel. Yes.
How often do we explain getting embarrassed on national TV like that on a must-have game? How many must-have game? Now, I'm not even counting the Code Red game because that was, I don't know, that was an aberration. But how many must-have games has this team had and they just didn't show up?
Well, what's interesting is that, you know, with some of the early turnovers, yeah, Dallas didn't take advantage of any of that stuff. And so it wasn't like the game was out of, as poorly as the Redskins played in the first half, the Cowboys did not, you know, as Doc Walker would say, step on their throats. They did not make the Redskins pay. The Redskins were still in this game.
Absolutely.
And like you said, a must win for nothing else, just to go back up by two games in this division and say, okay, you know, we're going to stop the bleeding from a couple of losses, and we're going to pull back and get control of the NFC East. And by the way, you know, I don't mean to be, you know, I guess I'm going to be the optimistic one. There's no need to change this after 5 or 6 years of doing this show. I mean, I'll be the optimistic one. They still control their own destiny in this whole thing. But the problem is that Thursday was the time where you can say this is going to be different. It's not going to be Groundhog Day. You're not going back in the time tunnel. It's a different team. And we talked about this even in week one with the Arizona Cardinals, when we thought, you know what, maybe things are turning around. And then we quickly changed our tone. But then I remember we're standing at 6-3 and thinking, you know what, this could be different. They could take control, but you drop two straight games and then you lose to the Cowboys. Had an opportunity to go back up by two games.
You know, the interesting thing is, now we don't want to downplay the fact that the team is playing without his starting quarterback, right? That you know,
right.
The starting quarterback's career is in jeopardy right now, and we're playing with the second string quarterback. I don't want to downplay that, except that the Super Bowl champions and the Super Bowl champions and his opponent in the NFC Championship both were backups.
Right, you know? Right. Well,
so,
right. Exactly.
So we're not going to say just because we're playing with the backup quarterback, then it's all over. And I went through this thing. I went into it optimistically. Optimistically, except I realized who was on the sideline. And I was among family and friends. We're going to talk about Thanksgiving in a minute, but I was among family and friends, and we were, you know, prepared to watch the game. And I said, you know, patting myself on the back quite prophetically, I said, if they come out with a play action pass, we're doomed. And that's the first thing he did, because, you know, because that's because a normal rational thinking football mind would say, quarterback's first start in eons. We're going to get him settled down. We're just going to hand off. We got one of the best running back in the league
it's
here.
It's a very emotional game.
Right.
Adrenaline's running at an all-time high. We're in Dallas. It's Thanksgiving. Give the ball to the future Hall of Famer, Adrian Peterson, to slow things down.
Let's get into the flow of this game. First thing, play action pass, and it was like either incomplete or 1.5 yard loss or something. Something that showed me that he was outthinking himself in this thing.
And what's interesting is, you know, if they would have gave that ball to Adrian Peterson, they would have only had 11 more carries. Cause it seemed like they're stuck in this 12 or 14. I mean, he had 12 carries with 35 yards in a game that was not out of hand in a must-pass situation until late in the third quarter. And even then, I don't think it was necessarily must-pass. But 12 rushes, and again, you can sit there and say, well, the rush as we had, they weren't productive. Well, you got to keep running the guy. He's got to get into the flow of the game. So does the offensive line. I mean, you have, and again, when it isn't like we kept passing because the passing game was working. Like, neither was working. And so I'd much rather trust this game to Adrian Peterson, get him some carries. You got to get him to between 20 and 25 carries a game. And this 12 business that they had on Thanksgiving, that's just not going to cut it.
You know, I'm going to steal something I heard on another show today. And first of all, let me tell all our fans listening, you know, we love you. But if you're one of these people who are talking about the new NFL, just turn the dial now. Just change the channel, right? Because we don't want to talk to you anymore. There is no new NFL.
But
still got to run.
All these people who talk about the new NFL, they always mention Brady, they mentioned Breeze, they mentioned Rodgers. It's like, it's not a new NFL. That's just elite talent. You
right.
know what I mean? That's elite. Cause like, so stop. That's like,
right.
Well, you know, like, of course, there's only one Brady, there's only one Breeze. Like, these guys don't grow on trees.
No, see, here's what they think. They think, they look at Brady, they look at Breeze, they look at Aaron Rodgers, they say, oh, well, we can do that. You know, we'll just do that. We'll just throw 4 touchdown passes of the game. We don't need to run the ball. You know, we'll throw it. We'll go shotgun on 3rd and 1. You know, we'll that ridiculous stuff, right? You know, so we're back where we were, and the man still has time to change, because since we've been doing this show, we've never gone into the month of December being in first place, having a piece of first place. It was just trying to make the playoffs. And that's the mindset here. They got to stop thinking about just barely making it. They got to start thinking like champions.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So what's the
point? Wasn't that Stephen A. Smith that got on Brian Mitchell about that whole thing. Wasn't that Stephen A. Smith?
Yeah, it was. It was. But you know, the interesting thing is, I think that's what they need to do. I think they, right now, they need to call themselves the beast of the NFC East, because that's what their opponents are going to be. They have to establish dominance in the division and then let the chips fall where they may. But right. you know, if they come out, you know, they could have beaten the Cowboys. Poor preparation. A lack of fundamentals in terms of tackling, poor defensive schemes, and the wrong personnel in the wrong time. Why was Quentin Dunbar in the game? The man could barely right. walk. Why
well, the thing is, and when you're a defensive back, you kind of need to be able to be nimble on your leg. Fred Smoot talked about this. I think it was the day after. It was Black Friday. I'm sitting there listening to Fred Smoot. And he was saying how, you know, if you're a D-back and anything below the waist is not 100%, like, it's just tough to put a person in there and expect him to check Amari Cooper or someone that on that talent level, because you've got to be able to break and you got to be able to cut and you got to be able to follow and you got to do it quickly. And if anything, from a toe. Remember, Deion Sanders used to get these turf toes all the time and would not play. And it was because he's like, I'm prime time. I'm not getting burnt because I got this turf, so I'm not going to play today, because he couldn't do it. And yeah, I mean, the play of Quentin Dunbar, would it really have been better if a backup was in there because he wasn't 100%?
How can that, you know, that's exactly right. The mindset of the people are saying, you know, I have a guy who is not performing up to his capabilities because of physical injury. Are you going to tell me that he is that much better than a rookie who just doesn't have the experience? A good defensive football mind would develop a scheme to assist the rookie. Maybe a little zone, a little double coverage, you know?
And let me be honest with you. Look, I don't know these professional football playbooks and defensive schemes and the language and how complicated it can be. But suppose it's a rookie or someone that play. The thing is, you know, you're on the team. And the team is going to need you in case someone gets hurt, right? You should be ready to go. We're not in week one. This isn't the preseason. Like, you've had time to study up on these schemes and time to watch what happens. And so at some point when it's your time to go, you know, you should be ready to go. And let me say this, too. If the drop-off is that bad to where you would rather take a Quentin Dunbar, given the performance he gave Thursday, over someone else, then the problem isn't whoever's stacking the team.
Yeah.
The problem is with whoever's, you know, as Bill Parcells would say, whoever's buying the groceries. Forget who's making the dinner. It's with who's buying the groceries. If you don't have anybody on that roster who could do better than Quentin Dunbar, hurt.
You know, that's interesting, though, because the groceries are good enough to get them to 6-3. You see what I'm saying, right? The groceries have been up against Odell Beckham. You know, they've been up against Drew Brees. They've been up. You know, the groceries are becoming good, but it's got to do something to the human psyche to say, well, I want to play, but they're putting a guy with a leg and a half out there in front of me. I'm questioning. And I'm a sports talk show guy. I'm questioning the capability of the coaching staff. I don't know if they're capable of coming up with schemes that can hide a rookie out there here's something else that was amazing to me. And we've said this before. The opposing offenses will come to a point in the game facing the Burgundy and Gold, and they know exactly what to do.
Absolutely. Well, we talked about this. I mean, I've not seen – well, I see very few teams that seem to make absolutely no adjustments after the first half. And the Redskins seems to be one of those teams where there's just no adjustments made offensively, defensively, to where you can figure out what they're doing and you can beat them up in the second half and almost fight your way back. And we talked about this when you looked at the Tampa Bay win and when you look at the other win that reminded me of this, where we looked at it and said, hey, look, a win is a win is a win, and I get that, but the way they're winning, where it's a lot of the time it's the other team kind of self-destructing. Cause,
you mean the Clank game, perhaps?
Exactly. Well, right. Well, the first Dallas game, exactly.
Yeah.
And when you see another team self-destructing, that's how you win. Yeah, it can get you to 6-3, but there's going to be a period in time when it could be to get into the playoffs, playoffs, or it could be to close out the division, or it could be in the playoffs, the first round, where you have to actually beat the team. And if you can't beat a team, you just depend on them self-destructing, then you'll never be able to win your division. You'll never be able to get past the first round of playoffs. And like you said, it's going to be the Time Machine Groundhog Day movie all over again.
I'll take it a step further. You're talking about making adjustments, right? You not only make moves, it's a chess game. You make moves, and then you make counter moves. When Dallas scored the first touchdown, the defensive coaches said, okay, they're doing this. It's time to make a counter move so that doesn't happen again. But they don't. And you know why I know they don't? Because the same thing happened. The same thing happened again, right?
Well, you want to talk about moves and counter moves. Let's look at both of these teams' trade deadline pickups. Ha-ha Clinton Dix. When it was announced that the trade was made, I mean, you know, you listen to talk radio and you would have thought that, okay, they're going to become the 99 Ravens.
All except for this show.
Exactly. We do, because our whole thought process is, if he's that good, why'd they let him go?
That's right.
Right. I mean, we just ask those basic questions. If he's that good, why would the Packers, you know, unless it's some complicated, you know, money situation with his contract or anything like that, why would they let him go?
Yeah,
so they let him go.
That.
Yeah, we're still asking that, right?
Yep.
And then you contrast that with Amari Cooper, and it's a different situation, it seems like, in Oakland, because you've got Khalil Mack, who, you know, was traded, and he's doing all kinds of great things in Chicago. Amari Cooper, some of those guys just don't like Gruden. They don't like playing for him.
Right.
They don't like playing for John Gruden's brother. But, and so you look at those two pickups and you're like, did Ha-Ha Clinton Dix really make the defense any better? I don't think so.
Maybe.
I've seen the defense get worse.
It seems like it's gotten worse. It seems like it really has. And see, even with that, there's no rule to say he has to play.
Right. Well, that's the thing. And you made this point, and it might have been off air or it was in last week's show. You know, with Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, like, is Nicholson really, like, is Ha-Ha Clinton Dix really the type of defender that could come in on this team without any knowledge or any playing experience with the other 10 and really make a difference? Like, if that's the case, who's putting the ingredients together? I don't think it's the ingredients. I think it's a bad decision to have him play when you have guys who've been on this defense, who know the calls, who knows the adjustments, and who've played with one another. Then he's not that type of a difference maker. He's not a Khalil Mack where it's like, hey, Khalil Mack's coming to the team. Who's ever playing in his position, you're now his backup. He's not that kind of a guy. And why anyone would think he was in the first place baffles me.
So,
Dallas, it was clear that Amari Cooper would come on that team and would immediately be the best receiver on the team. He could only know two plays and
right.
be better than the other jokers that the Cowboys
Look,
have.
And not only that, but the presence of an Amari Cooper, people who know All talent, right. the presence of him would change the defensive structure. When you have to account for a player on offense, when you have to say, we have to make sure this doesn't happen, that takes a guy out of that box, the ones who are all focused on stopping Zeke. That takes, you know, that takes them out of the box, and it makes Dak's life a lot easier, in other words, right?
Ask Dak how easy his life is now. Isn't it interesting, though, how Dak, you know, struggles with the other receivers, and Amari comes in, and it's like that's his number one target. He's just looking for Amari Cooper over anyone else, and that's because that's the difference between having that number one receiver, and you can build trust as a quarterback with him, then they're not having it.
That's why people shouldn't listen to any other talk radio show. Well, some of them. I mean, you can listen. I'll name our friends. We listen to Doc Walker, right? You know, make sure, especially Doc, you can listen to Brian Mitchell. Listen to them. But
you listen to
the others. Yeah, that's right. Listen to us. You heard.
No knock on Brother Mitchell.
Yeah, you know we love him, right? But you heard people ridiculing the fact that Dallas gave up number one pick for this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And we were saying Dallas needed this guy.
Right.
What good is the pick? How many number one picks are around the league who aren't playing, who aren't producing?
It was
a brilliant move. And Washington got Ha-Ha.
And if he feels a need right now and he's your number one receiver, because so the season ends, Dallas doesn't make the playoffs. What do you think they're going to use for that with that number one pick? A receiver, a bona fide number one receiver. And if there's one available at the pick that they would choose, you know, who knows how he would turn out. But if you can get an Amari Cooper, who is a number one receiver, who has first round talent, and if you were to take him in the middle of the draft, you would think that that's a steal if Amari Cooper was available at the, in the middle of the first round. And so why not use a middle of the first round pick in next year's draft to get him? I don't understand.
Speaking of first round wide receivers, we have one on this team, Josh Dotson. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, nobody could find him. You know, he catches one or two passes a game till Colt McCoy gets into the game. All of a sudden, he's open. You know?
Well, Josh Dotson, 6 catches, 66 yards. Jordan Reed, 6 catches, 75 yards. Let's see, he completed passes to, 6 different receivers on the day.
Yeah, that, you know, Colt is Colt.
24 for 38, 268 yards, 2 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. 3 interceptions, by the way, Dallas didn't really make them pay on those interceptions.
Hey, you know, but that's no surprise. I mean, you look at the stat sheet for Colt, you say, that's okay. That's Colt. You know that's
right,
what you were getting, right? Because he'll take a chance.
Well, and the big stat line to me was just 12 carries to Adrian Peterson. I want to talk about Colt. I want to talk about the fact that Adrian Peterson only had 12 carries.
Our good friend Doc, and I agree wholeheartedly, the announcers, Troy Aikman. Now, you know me, I'm a fan. I'm a fan first and foremost, radio professional, but I'm a fan. And, you know, I hate anything wearing silver and blue, right? When Troy Aikman says, you know, Adrian Peterson is used to running like with the fullback, you know, out the I formation, and I don't know if I like seeing him in the shotgun, you know?
Shotgun, I mean, it's just not what he's used to. It's just not what, it's not the type of back.
It's not the type of back.
Now, he's great enough to overcome that kind of stuff, but if you really want to put him in a sweet spot or put him in the best position to win, you got to line him up right behind that quarterback, man. Put a fullback in front of him. Let him go.
You know what happens, though? That removes control from the coaches, the ones who like to manipulate everything. If you just, like, rely on a off-tackle run, that puts it in the hands of your team, of your linemen, of your running back, right? You know.
And what's crazy and interesting to me all at the same time is that, again, we're not talking about a running back who has to prove himself, who has been a journeyman in the league, who was slightly productive in his heyday, and now he's a vet on his way out of the league. We're talking about a guy who's highly productive right now. Like, I don't even think the Redskins are 6-5 without Adrian Peterson on this team.
Without a doubt.
Because he just brought a confidence and a maturity to the team, and it's like the team just believed that they could be good because he's there, you know. And I think he raised the level of the offense up and that's not saying a lot, because it's not as if the offense have been like just, you know, putting up points all season, but the little bit of points and the confidence they seem to have, I feel, comes right from a direct benefit of having him on the team. And I mean, so to me, that's the type of back that you would then cater everything else around. Like, if you have, and you made this point years and years ago, when you have a quarterback who is different from other quarterbacks and has a talent that's different from other quarterbacks and is highly electrifying and useful and it is productive, you kind of say, you know what, this is what I like to do, but let's change it to fit the talent of our star player, as opposed to trying to make the star player fit your scheme.
Anybody who watched the Baltimore Ravens yesterday would agree with you.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, because that's what it is. You don't, if you're the chef, right, you just, if your recipe calls for eggs and your eggs aren't good, well, it's time to cook something else.
There you go.
Don't say, well, look, I'm going to put an orange in there in place of the egg, right, because I know it's a good recipe, right? You know, it doesn't work that way. Yeah, you know, we've gone long over time. We should take a break.
Exactly. Let's take a break. It's the Federal Football Report on Federal News Network, 1500 AM, federalnewsnetwork.com. Coming up, America, you know what you want, fake news or not. That's coming up next on the Federal Football Report. Welcome back to the Federal Football Report on Federal News Network, 1500 AM, federalnewsnetwork.com. Be sure to share the link if you're listening online with your family and with your friends. We'd love to get all the support that we can get listening to this fine program on Federal News Network. So coming up, we're going to give away the Stanfield Players of the Game, if we actually indeed think that anyone deserves that. And we're going to preview Monday night's game against the Philadelphia Eagles. But first, Kevin, it's time for Fake News or Not.
It's time for Fake News or Not.
That's right. right.
That's what he said. Yeah,
given right to Kevin. That's exactly what I said. Right. Three statements given to Kevin. He lets me know whether that's fake news or not. Statement number one, Kevin, the Redskins 6-5, Cowboys 6-5 as well. With things seemingly falling apart, this Monday night matchup against the Philadelphia Eagles is a must win for the Redskins. Is that fake news or not?
That, you can't get any more news than that, man. That is real. That is absolutely a must win, and that's what concerns me, because the must win scenario doesn't seem to bode well with this coaching staff.
Well, the must win scenario and the primetime nationally televised matchup, neither one of those seems to produce good outcomes.
You got the double whammy going here. Yeah, it does. It does not. But no, that's absolutely. This is a must win. This is a must win because I assume all games are nationally televised nowadays. People got the package and Red Zone network and all that. It shouldn't be a thing where there's a nationally televised game. And I mean, Monday night football games for the past couple of years have been the worst games on the schedule, right?
You're right. No, the Monday nights, Monday nights and Thursday nights have put some bad games.
Yeah, now they're starting to come around a little bit. This one coming up is very important. But no, this is absolutely a must win. And the coaches realize it. And the players realize it. So they just got to work together to make this thing work. And what I'm seeing is I don't really believe that the team believes in the recipes that the coaching staff is serving up.
It doesn't seem like it at all to me. And here's the thing. The Eagles are, so close to, they're on the brink of being, almost eliminated from playoff contention themselves. But if the Cowboys lose Thursday, even if they don't lose Thursday, the Eagles are still in it because, with that win against the Giants, they're fighting for their playoff lives as well. And they are the champs of the NFC East. And they're not going to go down without a fight. And it's going to be at Philadelphia. It's Monday night. The Eagles have a chance to get back into the playoff hunt. And so the Eagles are going to come ready to play. They're going to come ready to try to save their season. It's a must-win for the Redskins. That is news. But it's also a must-win for the Eagles.
That's
news as well. Which is going to make this whole thing very interesting on Monday night, I think.
Well, back a few – I hate the rule changes in football, but one thing they changed a few years back was the schedule changes and make sure that the division games close out the year, And that's the best football, I love seeing other teams' colors and all that. But this is championship football. You got to, you got to be the beast of the NFC East. We don't care what Stephen A. Smith says. What team does he root for? I don't know. He might, he might be a closet Cowboy fan. Who knows, right?
Who knows?
But no, this is a must, without a doubt, absolutely have to win game.
Statement number two in fake news or not. So I'm watching ESPN this morning, and they like to do these little analytic things and stuff like that with numbers. They said that the Cowboys now have, I think it was around 64 or 65% chance of winning the NFC East. The Redskins have a 24% chance of winning the NFC East. And then the rest, I guess, is about 11 or 12%. The Eagles have a chance of winning the NFC East. Are those numbers fake news or not? Is ESPN putting out fake news?
That's fake news. That's so fake. That is so fake. These are the same people who, giving those numbers out, that said that the Cowboys were stupid for using that number one pick to get Amari Cooper, right? So you can't believe that they say. No, man, it's just you can't, unless they have some type of device that can measure character and heart. This is what it boils to. And you know what? I was going to say, the Eagles are still the defending Super Bowl champions, and there's a pride factor involved too. They don't want to, they know their season was going bad, but you saw where they could have laid down against the Giants when they fell behind early. But
they did not. And that's the thing, like if the Cowboys lose Thursday night against the Saints, that whole number changes. Like, everything changes. It's week to week. So they put these things out there, 65% chance. And that all can change with one outcome of one game. And the reason that changes so dramatically is because if the Cowboys lose to the Saints, you have the Redskins and the Eagles playing each other, which will, whoever wins that game, they will now be almost in the driver's seat. If it's the Eagles who win, they'll be somewhat in the driver's seat because they still have a game, I think two games actually against Dallas. One game against Dallas, one more against the Redskins, and I think one against the Giants. I have to check that. But they would still have a lot of NFC East games still coming up. The Redskins, by the way, still have the Eagles. I think one more against the Giants.
Yes.
Two against the Eagles.
Two against the Eagles. Yep.
Exactly. And so they're still in the driver's seat. So, no, I agree 100%. That number right there, that is fake.
Totally fake.
That's the fakest news I've ever heard coming out of ESPN.
That's right.
Wow. Absolutely. So statement number three in fake news or not, Kevin, has to do with the secondary. Josh Norman, bad signing. The Redskins wasted money. He did not pan out to be who they thought he would be for that defense. Fake news or not?
I'd say that's fake news. The reason I'm saying that is because what would they have done to make it any better over there? I mean, you're looking at an organization that chased Carlos Rogers out of town, right, who went somewhere and he played in the Super Bowl. He was a perennial All-Pro after he left here, right, you know. So no, I think in a way it is inspirational. I think that they don't use him properly. I mean, that first Monday night game against the Steelers, that showed it, right? You know, if you know your best cornerback is on the left, I mean, the opposing cornerback is on the left, why would you throw with it? Just throw to the right. That makes it, and this goes back to my earlier point. They make it so easy for people. They don't use the skills that the guys have. They don't utilize their instincts, right? And maybe the scheme they have is too complicated. The guys just aren't smart enough. I know it ain't working, but I don't think you can say that Josh, as a matter of fact, Josh is kind of inspirational. That's how they learn how to bat the ball out of the receiver's hands and all that. You know, they learn that from Josh. If you remember last year, the biggest victory that they had last year was going to Seattle and beating Seattle, right? And there was a key play in the game where Josh was one-on-one with a receiver, or running back rather, and he put him in an arm bar where the running back had a choice of either get his arm broken or go down to the ground, right? You know, mm-hmm. So Josh pretty much saved the game. So I don't think we have a Josh Norman problem. I think that Josh has been sufficiently humbled, but I think Josh, he's certainly not doing anything to hurt the team. He's had a couple of bad games, but that's it.
And I agree too. You know, it's one of those things where you think it's better without them because you haven't had to face life without them.
Right.
And so if you had to face life without them, you'd know just how great he's been, how great of an addition he's been to the team.
Well, speaking of Josh, you know, in the New Orleans game, there was a publicized incident where there was a, you know, Josh was benched for a series coming back in the second half, and the reported word was that during halftime, Josh had some headphones in his ears, and Gruden came and snatched them out of his ears. Mm-hmm. Now, see, to me, and then after that, to follow up on that, they said it's not a big deal. I usually wear headphones at halftime, right? To me, the issue is, you let the guy wear headphones during halftime, right? You know,
exactly.
That's something that should have been addressed 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, don't get mad now and say, you know, hey, you can't do it and snatch it out of his ears because you're losing. It was all right when you were winning. You know, I think that it all speaks to a larger portion here. I think the cook needs to adjust the temperature, needs to adjust the recipe. If he has things on simmer, he needs to put them to a boil or something, right? Because ain't working the way it is. But having said all that, we're in first place still.
And there you go. And now you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Fake news or not, Kevin. That was fun, as always. Now let's take a look at the matchup coming up Monday night against the Philadelphia Eagles. We both agree that it is news, that it is a must-win game for the Redskins.
Win.
What do the Redskins have to do in order to win this game?
Well, I would say establish the run, but I don't know if they actually, you know, get
better. Well, we know that they have to do that, but we know they likely won't.
But to establish the run, they have to actually establish the run, what I'm saying here. And I heard on another network, he equates it to being a boxer, right? Interesting enough, we're going to talk about Creed a little later. But he said when you're boxing, so a lot of times a boxer will throw body shots. Mm-hmm. You know, he'll just throw one the first round, you know. One or two the second round, right? One, two, maybe one in the third. But he'll continue to do it through the course of the fight. And what that does, it doesn't knock a guy out immediately unless you're Mike Tyson or something.
Right.
But what it would do is
by
it would
the way, make... Honestly, because you mentioned Mike Tyson, I was watching some old Mike Tyson highlights on YouTube over the Thanksgiving holiday weekend. Man, I would not want to be across the ring with from Iron
Vicious.
Mike in his heyday. Oh,
Vicious,
gosh.
Vicious.
I would have died. Would have hit me once, and I would have lost my life.
That's what they all said. Yep. So eventually, though, but if you keep hitting guys with the body shots, eventually their arms will start to, like, drop a little bit, mm-hmm. right, to protect those ribs. And then you can fake the body shot, and then, well, you know, boom, you're wide open for the knockout. That's the same thing the running game does. The running game isn't designed to get you 8 yards every time you run the ball, right?
Right.
It's designed to hit you, and then you're going to break down eventually, right? Well, and that's what Gruden doesn't understand.
Yeah, well, and you talked about this, how, you know, ridiculous it is to run play-action pass on the first play. The defense may not be fooled by play-action pass that early if you haven't been running the ball. They don't think you're going to run it. You don't even, you know.
And that's out thinking. I know that they know.
Uh-huh.
Right.
The,
you
right,
know? But,
right.
So that's
right.
What we got there. So they got to establish the run. They got to play cautiously on defense. They can't take too many chances on defense. Mm-hmm. There was too much blitzing going on and not getting there.
And let me add this to your thing about defense.
Yeah.
Make tackles. Make tackles.
Basic
now,
football.
Amari Cooper is really good at yards after catch or after first contact, but you got to make tackles.
Yep. Wrap them up. That, you know, this new alleged NFL. I heard with my own two beautiful brown ears, I heard an NFL coach say, what we want to teach is the first guy doesn't have to tackle him. The first guy just has to bump into him and knock him off stride because the guys are so fast and he slows him down and the other guys tackle him. That's ridiculous. To me, the guy who said that, the most stupidest man in the world. Because if the first guy can touch him, he can tackle him.
Right?
Why wait for anybody else? Just go ahead and tackle him. So, yeah,
exactly.
They got to do basics. They got to stop jumping off sides. They know the snap count. You know, I mean, on offense, stop jumping. No more. You know, hold. You know, I don't mind holding penalties. I think the whole league, I think holding should be just legal, right? You know, the guys play smart on defense. They can't take too many chances. They can't leave guys alone in an island. They got to contain. They got to play the defense they played against Tampa Bay. That bend but don't break. That's how they can beat the Eagles.
And so we're hoping to get an Eagles win, get back on the right track, go 7-5, try to get the NFC East back in control. If not, I don't know what next week's show is going to be.
can tell you.
We'll see. So coming up in the next and final segment of the Federal Football Report on Federal News Network, we're going to talk about our Thanksgivings, how that went, and then also that's how our Thanksgivings, how our various Thanksgivings.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
We're going to talk about that, and then also Kevin has a movie review that I can't wait to hear. That's coming up next on the Federal Football Report. Welcome back to the final segment of the Federal Football Report, 1500 AM, federalnewsnetwork.com. Thanksgiving. Let's stop talking about football for a second.
Yeah.
Let's please stop talking about this.
Like with mad. Yeah.
Exactly. Let's talk about Thanksgiving. Kevin, how was your Thanksgiving? What did you do, man?
It was pretty interesting, man. I went over to the in-law's house, my mother-in-law's house, and it was actually quite fun because one of my wife's sisters, well her niece actually has 5 kids.
Oh, okay.
5 kids. She has 2 sets of twins.
Whoa.
Yeah, the oldest set is like 15.
Okay.
And the younger set, the oldest set, 2 girls, and the younger set are 5 or 6 something. And these kids were so much fun. I mean, the younger set was a boy and a girl. The little boy, he loves the Redskins.
And
he's so dramatic, right? When Colt threw the interception, the little boy jumped up on the floor and said, "What are you doing? Are you crazy?" So I found that very amusing, and it was just good to be around. Have a nice drama-free Thanksgiving. And phase two, I decided I was going to cook dinner on Friday, right? I have an indoor turkey fryer, right? And I found a turkey that I had in my freezer for over a year.
Oh,
I said,
wow.
Let me check this out. Save me a trip to the store. So I, you know, got on the Butterball hotline and said, how long can you keep a frozen turkey? Turns out you can keep it the way they package it and seal it. You can keep a frozen turkey for 3 years.
Get out of here.
Yeah, because I was about to throw this bad boy away. I said, well, I'm not going to mess with this. Yeah, but 3 years, and I had some defrosting, whatever you call it, techniques, and I did the injecting and all that. Awesome. I might age all my, like wine from now on, just age all my turkeys for a year. So, right, you know. And then the girls all came over. One daughter came in from Atlanta, and everybody came over, brought the boyfriends over, and they stayed up eating and playing games, right? And,
oh, nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I went to bed.
Well, there you go. That sounds like a good Thanksgiving.
Yeah. How about you?
So mine was so what I normally do is house hop. So in the morning, my cousin started a foundation in my grandmother's honor, and everything's given for the last 39 years, although I wasn't alive for most of them. But for the last 39 years, we've done a feeding of for veterans and homeless people and anyone who needs a hot meal on Thanksgiving. And so from 12 to 4, yeah.
Very good.
So from about 11:30 to 4, I was doing that. Then I went to my sister's house, who had a whole big situation there, and I was there man, with some passionate, passionate Redskins fans. And, man, they were very upset, to say the least.
Probably didn't ruin their appetite, though. Man.
No, it did not. Believe it. The food was delicious. There was plenty of it. Then we went to my mom's house, where there were plenty of passionate Cowboys fans.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were all happy and feeling good and singing holiday songs and stuff like that. And then, man, me and Manny went home after that. Man, I got home. It had to be close to 11 o'clock at night.
Oh, man.
My feet up and just ate some leftovers again. And watched some Christmas movies late at night. Now, my wife wasn't with us because her grandfather has some health challenges, mm-hmm, so we've been going back and forth there sometimes to see him. And so her and her mom and family decided they wanted to jet down there to see him. And so, but I still had something to do with the foundation, so I had to hold it down up here. So we spent Thanksgiving apart, but it was still all good. It was a little different, but it was
mm-hmm,
cool.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, but here's one thing. I do the whole house hopping thing, but every place has the same thing. Whether the baked chicken or turkey, ham, macaroni and cheese, string beans, cream corn, all, and so every place that I went, I got the same exact thing, just different versions of it.
Yeah, but you can play like Iron Chef and like give people points. So say your mac and cheese is a little creative, right. And you know, I give you a 5 for texture, but maybe a 4 for plating, right? You know, so that's what you have to do. You have to like make it to a game, right? But I enjoy the house hopping too. You get to see people who, and they have enough food for you when you get
exactly
it, right. You know,
and you don't have to clean up your house, and you don't have
to cook. That's true.
You don't have to. Now, we've hosted Thanksgivings before,
mm-hmm,
but, man, I'm telling you, I like to go. I like to get in the car and house hop, and then by the time I come home, nobody's there. It's still clean, and then I just sit back and warm up a plate and watch some TV.
Hey, but the cool thing about the way I did it Friday is I told them, hey, look, I'm cooking on Friday. There is no set dinner time. Whenever it's done, it's done. You know, so you can come at 1, you come at 8. You know, you bring whoever with you you want to. So this is no pressure on me. I'm just doing it for the joy of cooking. And nice. That was so much fun. I was so relaxed instead of trying to get certain things in by a certain time and this and that. No, man, no, just relax and enjoy it. Eat now. Now, the leftover portion, I sort of underestimated. I miscalculated, like, how good it was going to be because it was like my wife said, where is the food? Well, you know, because, see, they didn't, like, take place like normally, like, you wrap yourself up. They just stayed there and ate leisurely.
Right? Just ate the whole day.
That's funny. It was like the carcass looked like one of those desert scenes with the skeleton laying out there, right? You know,
but it clearly was good food.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
But there you go. There you have it. Now, you also, people who listen to the show know this, you're a renowned movie critic.
Renowned.
So you had the chance to go catch up on a film that came out during the holiday weekend. Which film was that?
Yeah, it was a film that I've been looking forward to for a long time because I liked the prequel, or whatever you call it. It was the sequel to Creed, and imaginatively titled Creed 2. Yeah. Right. So, and I really, really enjoyed the first one. And as a matter of fact, I felt when I saw it, and I said it on this show, that I thought Sylvester Stallone should have gotten an Academy Award for his performance because it was that unique and that heartfelt. Now, what they did with Creed 2, it was a different different director. I forget who directed the first one, but the gentleman who directed this one was Stephen Caple. And, you know, the storyline is, Adonis Johnson is Apollo Creed's illegitimate son. He had a baby by another woman, and Dolph Lundgren back in the day doing Rocky IV, who was Ivan Drago, killed him in the ring, right? Beat him to death in the ring, right? And so he hooked up with Rocky, and you know, Rocky trained him, and he eventually in this movie, in this version, wins the championship, right?
Right.
And in Russia, while this is happening, Ivan Drago is training his son to be a professional boxer, and his purpose is to get revenge on Rocky, right? You know, and he hooks up with a sleazy Don King type promoter, and they get the fight going on, right? And X, Y, and Z. I have to interject here. I go to a lot of movie screenings, and I have to say this. I didn't want to say this, but I got to say it for the people in this screening were so ghetto. I mean, back in the old days when I was a kid, when you used to, like, talk at the screen, oh, yeah, Rocky, go get you now, you know, stuff like that, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They were ghetto. Like, there was two rows of people behind me who were ghetto, right, yelling at the screen, talking, people saying, shh, why y'all shushing me? I'm just having fun, you know, this and that. That wasn't bad enough, but at the climactic part, the big fight at the end, there was a woman screaming at the top of her lungs in the back, "Go Creed! Go Creed!"
As if this was going to help.
As if it was helping. As if she was cheering him on. So I had to get that out, man, because I wouldn't, goodness. You know, that was just something else.
I would hate that.
Now, the movie was good, but a couple of things. Like Michael Buffer and who's the guy's name that does all the fight commentary? Max Kellerman. Mm-hmm. You know, they played. They were in Creed, right? They were back there. But the production was off because when you listen to them in Creed, it was like they were actually there and this was really happening. In this movie, it sounded like a soundtrack. It sounded like, which they probably did, recorded the line somewhere and laid it over, and it just wasn't real. I mean, I knew it was a fight, and you know, people hit people. For real, like these people hit people, they'd be dead. But right. It just was not produced well enough in terms of putting it all together. And the storyline, they had a bunch of stuff in there because there were some great performances. Tessa Thompson played his girlfriend, Bianca, and Felicia Rashad, a.k.a. Claire Huxtable.
Exactly.
Great performance.
As always.
Great performance.
She's great.
Dolph Lundgren as the older Ivan Drago. Great performance. There's one scene when it's just Rocky and Drago talking. Fantastic scene.
You know, I was going to ask you, one movie critic, not as great as you, but how can you expect him to be?
Yeah, it's rough.
He mentioned that that there are points in the movie where you almost feel sorry for Ivan Drago for what, you know. Did you feel that way? Like you
almost, but not like the current administration. I know the Russians are the enemy,
right.
but you can understand. I had no empathy for him, but you can understand. Okay. And that's another thing. The movie goes a little bit. This is a Creed movie. We don't care what happened to Ivan Drago, right? You know, but you can see why the character developed like he did, right?
Okay.
You know, so, I'd recommend it. I mean, you know, don't go to the theater I went to, but
well, this is the reason why I don't go to movies.
That's a good reason.
When they release.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wait 2 to 3 weeks afterwards. I just don't feel, I don't want to be in the theater with a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can't control who's in there with you. Like, I can't stand at the door and say, you're too ghetto. You know,
somebody should.
Somebody should.
So they should invent something called a getometer, right?
And if yeah, and so you can't.
Sorry, bro. No, can't come in, man. You know, straight out of Compton playing down the hall.
Exactly. Oh my goodness, too funny.
Yeah, but I give it a solid. I gave the last one a 4. I give this one a solid 3. Not as good,
okay.
Still good. Not as good as the first one, but still good.
Okay, not bad. Not bad. There we go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. That's the movie review, Thanksgiving review. We're in the holiday season. Now, here's the thing about the holiday season, too, Kevin, is that while you will hear, you know, these Black Friday deals are only good while they last, or this is the last Wednesday sale before Christmas, or this is the last 2-day door bust. No, it's not the last any sale. Like, everything's going to be on sale from now through New Year's Day, even afterwards.
For real.
So don't buy into the temptation of having to catch the last 3-day door buster deal to last midnight. Nope, it's not going to be the last one before Christmas. They will be on sale for weeks and weeks and weeks. And so just take your time. Don't fight people in the mall. Don't fight over parking spaces.
That's right.
I want to talk about parking spaces. We'll do that next week.
Yeah,
it's a different philosophy with different people.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see what kind of person you are, Kevin, with parking spaces. And by the way, Stanfield player of the game. Who do you got?
A couple of things. Now, you know, we had the contest last week. You know, the Cowboy
fan.
Right,
exactly.
And the Redskin fan, right? And the winner, of course, the Cowboy fan. Then the only reason, I'm not going to announce it because I have not contacted her yet to let her know she won. You know, and I don't want to, you know how it is, you know, it's pending notification of a family, right? As hard as it is for me to admit it, they won. And she deserves it, right? You know, I would say that we're the only ones that deserve the luxury of Stanfields, but. but she deserves it. Now, going back, now we'll have all that for you next week, but going back to award the Stanfield players of the game, we're going to do it a little differently. I'm going to do it twice.
Okay.
The first one goes to Troy Aikman because he put aside his impartiality and was speaking truth. Like late in the game when there was that vicious helmet, the helmet hit on Jordan Reed, you said, how do you not call that? You know, So for him standing up for truth, justice, and American way, Troy Aikman wins our Stanford player of the game.
Uh-huh.
And then we'll go a little bit different. I'm going to award the entire Washington Redskins team Stanfields for the upcoming game because they're going to need them. This is not a game you're going to go into. This is a must-win. And you're in a must-win situation. You must win with Stanfields. You've got to. So we're going to award them all shapes and sizes and colors of the Stanfields. And they better put them on. I would say tighten them up, but they already fit so well, right? You know, so.
I've never had undergarments that fit so perfectly. Hey, I just got to be honest.
They're wonderful. We thank our friends at Stanfield at LTD up in the Great White North, right? You know, absolutely. We've done our part for international relations, so they better put them on. They better use them because they're going to need them on Monday night.
Well, there you go. And we'll have a recap of Monday night's game coming up next week on the Federal Football Report.